The Royal Newfoundland Constabulary won't say if convicted rapist cop was fired or resigned from force. Doug Ford targets pro-Palestinian student protesters. Feds table a bill on foreign interference that would grant CSIS expanded powers. Hamas accepts ceasefire deal, and Israel says it will continue its invasion of Rafah. And floods devastate Brazil. Good morning. It's Tuesday, May 7th. I'm Nora. Here are your headlines. First, we start in St. John's. Carl Douglas Snellgrove is no longer a cop with the Royal Newfoundland Constabulary. He was charged back in 2015 for raping someone while he was on duty and was convicted of the charge in 2021. But while the police force confirmed that he was no longer working for the force, they refused to say whether he was fired or he quit. The force claims that they can't publicly comment on HR matters, though if Buddy quit, that wouldn't be an HR matter. That would be his own decision. So I guess I just cracked the case. Snellgrove appealed his conviction to the Supreme Court, who declined to hear it this past February. As such, there has been no police complaint made against Snellgrove, as it has to wait until criminal proceedings have happened before internal disciplinary measures can take place. Now, maybe because everyone in Newfoundland and Labrador knows about this case, CTV decided to shorten the story from the Canadian press, or maybe the story was already shortened, but it doesn't go into much about Snellgrove's behavior. Well, back in 2023, CBC reported that Snellgrove, quote, was sentenced to 4 years for raping a young woman in her living room while on duty in 2014, unquote. This was in a story that mentioned that 8 women had come forward saying that they had also been sexually assaulted by various members of the Royal Newfoundland Constabulary. To find out more information than that, because there wasn't much more about Snellgrove in that article, I had to go further back to 2021, an article from the Canadian press. Snellgrove offered the woman a ride home after she had a night out in downtown St. John's. At the time, Snellgrove was in his cruiser and in uniform. The woman accepted his ride as she was worried that she might be sexually assaulted by a taxi driver. Snellgrove was first acquitted of the charges in 2017, sparking protests that called for justice for the woman. Next to Ontario, where Premier Doug Ford took aim at student encampments that have sprung up in solidarity with Palestine. He said that he thinks that they need to be moved and that universities should step in to move them. Thankfully, the encampments in Canada have not yet had to deal with police. The Canadian press reported that Ford made these comments just as administrators at the University of Toronto said that they are close to coming to a deal with the students. Since McGill and Concordia students started their encampment a few weeks ago, more encampments have spread up across Ontario and across the country. The students' demands have been simple and straightforward. They have asked that their universities divest from Israeli companies and cut any academic ties to Israeli universities. Encampments have also started to pop up globally, following the lead of American students and their actions. Now, later today on this week's episode of Sandy and Nora, we talk about the encampments. We talk about the encampments particularly through the lens of the fight against South African apartheid and how students at the University of Toronto really did fight with similar tactics to force the university then to be on the right side of history. The question now is, what will it take to get the university to be on the right side of history today? Next, the federal government has tabled a bill that they say will deal with foreign interference. Bill C-70 was tabled after a public inquiry concluded that other countries had attempted to interfere in Canada's last 2 elections. I mean, God help us. If some country could actually come and give us better candidates, I would be all about that. Because, folks, it's leaving us with 2 terrible choices. Please, interfere better. According to the CBC's Catherine Tunney, the bill aims to do several things. First, it introduces a list of new offenses. For example, it would be an indictable offense under the Security of Information Act for any person under instructions from an outside country to influence a political or governmental process. It would also make it an offense for anyone in a foreign country's direction to try and influence schools and universities. What the heck is about that? That's weird. Secondly, it introduces a registry that collects information on individuals who work on behalf of foreign countries to influence Canadian politics or government. Anyone who does work like that would have to register with the federal government. Some diaspora activists have called for this, citing threats they've received from other countries. Finally, the bill also increases CSIS's powers regarding this file, of course. According to CBC, it would allow the spy agency to share information about possible foreign interference with federal government members, as well as, quote, researchers, businesses, Indigenous communities, and local governments, unquote. Businesses? What? I mean, researchers make sense. Indigenous communities make sense. And local governments, though, I mean, we still need some guardrails on that kind of thing, folks. But businesses? What? I mean, this sounds a lot like the law in Georgia that pro-Western forces are fighting because they're saying that makes Georgia too close to Russia in limiting how much foreign interference can be done in their politics. Isn't that interesting that how this comes to Canada? It's like, yeah, no big deal. It's coming from the Liberals. Okay. I guess we'll keep our eyes on that one. Turning now to international news. Hamas has accepted a ceasefire proposal from Qatari and Egyptian mediators. On the other hand, Israel initially said the proposal differentiated from what it had initially viewed and fell short of its list of demands. The details of the proposal were not clear, but according to Al Jazeera reporting, it included three phases, each lasting 42 days. A Hamas spokesperson told Al Jazeera that the terms they agreed to included a withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza and a return of displaced Palestinians to their homes, as well as an exchange of Israeli captives and Palestinian prisoners. The first phase would deal with the exchange of Israeli hostages and Palestinian prisoners while negotiations through mediators continued. The second phase would see a pause in Israel's military activity in Gaza. And the third and final phase would focus on rebuilding Gaza with international partners. As of writing the script, which was last night, Israel hadn't explicitly rejected the deal, but their position is being interpreted that way, particularly by protesters that took to the streets of Tel Aviv en masse to demand that Netanyahu accept it. All while this was happening, Israel continued its attacks on Rafah, where 1.4 million displaced Palestinians are trapped. Israel's increased attacks on the city came a day after it told Palestinians to evacuate Rafah as it seemingly prepared for a ground invasion, despite objections from the international community, and namely the United States, despite also the fact that there's nowhere for people in Rafah to go. Several international aid organizations have been saying for weeks that there is no safe way to evacuate people from Rafah to other parts of the Gaza Strip because the territory has been reduced to rubble. By Monday night, reports seemed to suggest that Israel had gone ahead and started a ground invasion into Rafah. We must watch what is happening there and continue to push for a ceasefire. And finally, to Brazil, where floods have devastated the country's southern Rio Grande do Sul state. At least 75 people have died, while 103 other people are missing over the past 7 days as a result of the floods. The state's governor said that damage was unprecedented. Infrastructure like bridges and roads have been destroyed, and around 88,000 people have been forced out of their homes. This was the fourth time over the course of the year that the state saw similar flooding. El Niño is being blamed for the high levels of downpours experienced in other parts of the world, like you might remember Kenya. Scientists say the extreme weather is directly due to climate change and that events like this will likely worsen as we continue down this path of destruction and self-sabotage. Those are your headlines for Tuesday, May 7th. I'm Nora. It's Tuesday. It's Sandy and Nora Day. You are going to be hearing us talk about encampments, as I have said. It's a great episode, especially because, you know, Sandy's quite an expert on holding encampments. And so she provides some insight into what they're doing and how you might be able to support them. You are listening to this podcast at sandynora.com on the Real News Network podcast feed and anywhere you get your podcasts. Reminder, share this podcast with all your friends. We don't have access to mass media like the worst of voices in Canada do. And so we rely on you to share the good news.